His Bond by Laleith Quetzali, read by CookieMom6067. It's been said that a man's word is as good as his bond. Back in 1789, Hob Gadling gave his word to a strange benefactor to be there, were the stranger to ever need him. And to that word he'll hold. Had it been up to him, Dream of the Endless would have never called for help, not from anyone. So perhaps it's a good thing that it's not up to him. For once a man's word has been given, it is binding. You need not have come to my defense. For a moment, Hob considers saying something simple like, clearly, which would be true enough. Then again, he knew before he did anything at all that there was little chance of his stranger needing his help at all. A man responsible for Hob having lived for centuries, who was clearly immortal himself, who was always dressed in very fine clothing fitting with the current fashions, and don't get him started on the huge ruby that hung from his throat. So no, it was unlikely that his stranger truly needed him. That wasn't why Hob intervened. He did it because he wanted to be useful to his stranger. Hob felt good being able to fight for him. So many wars he'd fought for others as a soldier and a mercenary. This might be another instance of him serving another, but this time it wasn't something Hob needed to do for food or money or a title, but entirely his choice, which is what prompts a very different answer from him than the one he originally intended to give after his stranger's words. Perhaps not, but it's my honor to be of service. Hob bows his head formally. Not just today, but whenever you might have a need, great or small, it shall always be my honor to serve you, my lord. You know I do not require this of you, the stranger begins, clearly taken aback by Hob's offer. I know, Hob nods calmly. Yet my offer stands. Today, tomorrow, whenever and wherever you need me, I'll be there. You ought to be careful, Hob Gadling, the stranger tells him seriously. To make such offers, words may have power, more even than you might expect. If they do, all the better. I give you my word, my solemn vow, my lord. If you ever have need of me, doesn't matter the day, the place, the time, if you have need of me, I will be there always. It's a little known fact, mostly because it rarely happens, but those with real power, like particularly powerful magic users, the Fae, gods, and other such beings, their words hold power. Once a vow is made, the magic will hold them to their word, no matter what. Now, such things usually wouldn't mean much where humans are concerned, but Hob isn't just any human. An immortal, touched by two of the endless, marked by at least one of them, his vow is binding. Something he finds out in a most unexpected manner one summer night in 1916. One moment he's on the Western Front, fighting a battle he's beginning to suspect they won't be winning, or at least not in as decisive a manner as the higher-ups would prefer. The next, Hob's ears are ringing, and he feels something that he could almost call motion sickness, except for the fact that he hasn't moved at all, or at least not by his own will. Which really should freak him out more than it is. Perhaps the only reason it doesn't is that he knows instinctively that there's really no time for freakouts. Ever the soldier, the warrior, Hob takes in his surroundings without moving an inch from his crouched position. He sees yellow golden symbols on the stone floor underneath his feet. Runes. He doesn't know nearly enough about magic to know what those runes do, yet an instinct tells him they cannot be for anything good. All around the room, beyond the circle, are hooded and robed people, all but one, whose hood is down, an old man with grayed hair. Yet again, Hob's instincts kick in. He knows this man must be the one calling the shots, which means he's the one to watch out for when a fight breaks out, which will happen sooner or later. Beyond the robed people in the shadows of some columns are more people, but the way they're staying back makes Hob decide to dismiss them, at least for the time being. The last thing he focuses on is what's behind him, yet inside the circle, a figure robed in black and wearing what looks eerily like the gas masks worn by some men at the front. Hobbs, about to dismiss the figure, deciding that it being unconscious lessens its priority, until he notices the jewel that hangs from its neck, a ruby, one Hobb knows all too well. "Who are you?" the old man demands. In the pompous tone Hobb remembers all too well from dozens, if not hundreds, of nobles too used to having unearned power over the lives of others. "Stay back," Hobb snaps in return, waving around the bayonet in his hands. He didn't even realize until then that he still had the weapon in his hands, though in hindsight it makes perfect sense. He was on the front in battle. It might have been night, but the enemy cares little enough for such things, and more than once attacks began in the dark of night, entirely intentional, no doubt. Most men tend to sleep with one eye open and a weapon in hand. Even not quite knowing just yet what's going on, Hobb has a feeling he'll be making use of his weapon before the end. "I demand you tell me your name," the old man snaps. Hobb keeps from rolling his eyes at him, but only barely. "I am the Magus. I captured you both according to the laws of magic," the man states. "Though I sought only one, tell me, are you death?" Hobb's mind is working a mile a minute as things start falling into place, somewhat. He doesn't know for sure that his stranger is death, though if he's not, there must be some connection, right? Otherwise, how could one explain Hobb's immortality? If the man before him, the so-called Magus, used magic of some kind to summon Hobb's stranger, that might explain his state, unconscious or catatonic or whatever else that might explain him being laid out there. On the other hand, the runic circle might have something to do with it. He pushes that aside for the time being, as it's not what matters. Fact is, his stranger, who may or may not be death, was summoned by a wannabe magician, and Hobb tagged along for some reason. Hobb could scoff. He's going to help, of course, though he doubts his stranger will like it any more than he did the first time. It hits Hobb then. "I give you my word, my solemn vow, my lord. If you ever have need of me, doesn't matter the day, the place, the time. If you have need of me, I will be there. Always." He said that, didn't he? Hobb is the kind of man who still believes his word is his bond. It might be the time he was born in, or the way he was educated growing up, or perhaps all those books he read on chivalry and honor and the like when first working on the press, the very first books he ever read, as he was still learning his letters back then. Whichever the case, the fact remains that he believes in keeping his promises, no matter how hard or to whom. Even if he might still not know the identity of the man he made that most solemn oath to. Under normal circumstances, he might never have known that his stranger had need of him. But then again, nothing about Hobb's life is normal, is it? It hasn't been, since the first time he didn't die, which, come to think of it, was long before he ever met his stranger. Hobb notices from the corner of his eye as one of the hooded people approaches the circle from behind him, hand extended. Hobb knows not whether he intends to touch his stranger, steal from him, or something far more nefarious. It doesn't matter. Hobb's reaction, honed by months fighting on the Western Front, has him put a knee on the ground and spin on it, weapon held tight in his hands. A black man yells in pain as he stumbles back, cloak torn and arm cut up and bleeding. Hobb's actions also serve to scare a few others, which is made obvious by how they back away from the circle and from him. "Stop," the Magus yells. "Stop, I command you." "You cannot command me, old man," Hobb scoffs. "You have no power over me." That's clearly not what the man wants to hear. He becomes abruptly furious. So much, Hobb wonders at the chances of him dying of that fury alone. "Then I have no use for you," the Magus decides. "Kill him." Hobb truly does roll his eyes then. And it's not even at the futility of the order, but the fact that even as he gives it, the old man backs away himself, clearly valuing his life much higher than that of his sycophants. It doesn't matter. Hobb cannot know for sure if it's having just been involved in a war, where it's always kill or be killed when it comes to dealing with one's enemies, or if it's simply that this is his stranger these people are threatening. They've managed to get him once. Hob won't be giving them the chance to so much as attempt it a second time. The short magazine, Lee Enfield Rifle Mark III, can fire as many as 15 rounds a minute when used by a well-trained infantryman. Hob's very well-trained. And when he runs out of bullets, he still has the bayonet, the back of the rifle, to use as a club, and even a smaller gun, and two more blades on his person. Hob's been in more than enough battles to know it's far better to be too prepared than not enough, to have too many weapons than not enough. By the time the echo of the last body dropping comes to an end, the only people in that basement still alive are those inside the circle, and Hob. He knows that the kid who is hiding behind the columns at the beginning fled the moment he started shooting, and he's just fine with that. While his hands may be drenched in blood and not all of them bad people, he's been in way too many wars, and he was a mercenary before that, and even a highwayman. He's never deluded himself into believing he's only ever killed those who deserved it. He'd rather not add a child's death to his count. The old man who was with him wasn't so lucky. Hob cannot bring himself to care about that. A kid might have been young enough to not know what was going on, or at least not be to blame for it. Adults are another matter entirely. If he was in that basement, he either knew what was going on or he was an idiot. With that thought in mind, and after making a quick round of the basement to make sure no one's going to suddenly get back up and attack him again, Hob finally turns back to his stranger. He's still unconscious inside that runic circle, considering the possibility that the runes might be the problem in the first place, though keeping in mind a possible reaction, Hob drops on one knee before dragging his hand through the closest rune, breaking the circle. There is a reaction, like, well, it feels like the shockwave when some strong explosive goes off. Hob barely manages to hold himself in place and not end up sprawled on his back. He laughs loudly. He knows it's part hysteria. He's coming down from the adrenaline high pretty fast, but he cannot lower his guard yet, not until his stranger is safe, until he knows for a fact he's managed to keep his word. Who dares? The stranger rises swiftly, smoothly, looking almost like some kind of predator, a big cat, perhaps, on the hunt. With the bizarre helmet on his face and the black robes, he looks the most inhuman Hob has ever seen him. However, it's his words, the sharp memory of 1889 that they bring for Hob that makes him practically flinch when he hears that voice. It's that movement, small as it is, that calls the stranger's attention to him. Hob Gadling! The stranger's voice booms loud and sharp as a blow all on its own. What have you done?
He saved you, my lord.
A new voice, female this time, calls.
Jessamy, my raven!
The stranger turns his attention to the white-breasted corvid, still half-tucked inside his robes. Hob officially has no idea what's going on anymore.
You were summoned, my lord, Jessamy informs him, by human magicians. We were both cut off from the dreaming the moment we appeared in this place. Hob Gadling appeared shortly afterwards. He protected us, you, from the humans, killed them when he found himself threatened.
Simple and to the point. Hob Gadling. It's impossible to miss that the stranger's tone is much gently this time as he says the human's name.
Yeah, I know. Need not have come to your defense and all that, Hob says in a half-dismissive tone, only to get serious a moment later.
I gave you my word, my lord.
That you did, the stranger agrees quietly, hesitating for a moment before adding, dream. My name, it's Dream of the Endless.
Dream. Hob shapes his name slowly, carefully, almost tasting it. Dream does not blush because he does not allow it to happen. Hob's so happy, incandescently so. He has a name. It might have taken him over 5 centuries to get it, but he has a name now, and he's managed to be of use to his stranger, his lord, his dream. It's truly more than Hob ever imagined possible. Truth be told, had it been his choice, Dream of the Endless would have never called for help, even after finding himself trapped by the Magus and his order, not from his siblings, and certainly not from Hob. So perhaps it's a good thing that this time it wasn't his choice to make. It was Hob's, a choice that was made over a century ago, and to which he'll forever hold. Hob's contemplating the wisdom of offering his lord, Dream, assistance, getting somewhere, perhaps a room for the night. He's afraid the other man might take it the wrong way, take offense for whatever reason. The last thing Hob needs is for the night to become a repeat of 1889, especially when things are going so much better thus far. "I must go," Dream announces right then. "What?" Dream's declaration takes him so completely by surprise. Hob blurts the word out without even stopping to think about possible consequences. "You have my thanks, Hob, for your prompt aid," Dream states. "But I must return to my realm, ensure that my capture, however brief, has not affected the dreaming unduly. After that, I must still hunt down a recalcitrant nightmare, lest he do more damage than he already has." "Oh." Hob won't lie, he's a bit disappointed. "There's probably nothing I can do regarding your realm, wherever that might be. But if I could be of any assistance with your hunt, I..." Dream wants to say no, he does, and yet Hob has already been of assistance in a most unexpected manner. Who's to say he won't do it again? "I'll consider it." "Wonderful." Hob cannot help it. He smiles. He wants to ask when he'll see Dream again, hoping it might be before 1989, whether that be for the hunt of the nightmare. Is that a literal nightmare or just a figure of speech? Yet he doesn't quite dare. Still hesitant that he might say the wrong thing and ruin everything again. "I believe I must apologize for how I abandoned our meeting in 1889. Dream's admittance shocks Hob to his core. "It was not... I'm not a nice person, Hob." "Oh, don't I know that?" Hob snorts before he can stop himself, then hurries to clarify. "I've never believed you or expected you to be nice, Dream. Then again, I'm not exactly nice myself, am I? The things I've done in my very long life. No, I'm not a nice person at all." Dream tilts his head to the side, seemingly contemplating that for a few moments before eventually nodding. It's not judgment in the end, just reality. He makes to turn, Jessamy flying to his shoulder from the nearby beam where she's been roosting while the two men talked. "My lord," Hob blurts out in the end, deciding that he's been having such good luck tonight he may as well go for broke, "will I see you again? Before 1989, I mean." "You will see me again, Hob Gadling. Soon." Dream even smiles. Just a little bit, but it's there. At him as he says that, "I give you my word." And that matters. It's enough. Because as has been proven, a man's word is his bond. The end.